The masters almost surely have a plan. There's clearly maybe something there beyond the realm of man. And until you've thoroughly tested every last close trusted view, I find the more you think you know, the less you really do.
That's true, Dr. Zaius.
Very well.
Where would we be without THC? 'Cause we know they're lying to us, just don't know.
All right, all right, all right. How the heck are you, Higher Side Chatters? Drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and soaking in the implications of today's show. From sunny San Diego, I'm Greg Carlwood, and what excellent timing. Not only does NASA release the proof of flowing liquid water on Mars, but I sat down with John Brandenburg about another more revealing piece of information about Mars that really tells us a lot about the past. It's a synergy, a coalescing that you just can't plan. And it's a curious thing because by no means do I trust that NASA is really revealing the bleeding edge of what they know, and neither does today's guest. I mean, hey, that's a fundamental THC principle, right? But we are operating on a fairly conventional playing field today, albeit with a thread of evidence that is really anything but. John's a good guy with a very impressive resume that you can't dismiss, and for me, I feel like I can firmly place his perspective in my Rolodex as Exhibit A for some of the wilder claims researchers are making about the ancient, unknowable past. So here to lay a good base and break down everything we think we know about Mars and some things they'd rather we didn't is John Brandenburg. And to play us in is a real treat I got in my inbox not long ago from an artist known as Tactlacker, featuring Smother Teresa and MC Slim C. I now pretty much have some crazy THC bumper music in every style, every genre, thanks to all the great artists sending these in. But here's Tactlacker and company with the great John Brandenburg and the God of War himself on the other side. Enjoy.
THC is on fire, all you people get stoked. Drink a little drink, smoke a little smoke. THC is hella fresh, helping people stay woke. Drink a little drink, smoke a little smoke. Something ain't right and something smells fishy. The air is getting hot and I'm feeling kinda dizzy. Trying to find the truth, but again it's proved elusive. Higher side chats, always bringing the exclusive. Kicking so much ass that it's legally abusive.
Cryptids, cover-ups, new world order. Time is running low and the days are getting shorter. Chemtrails, creepy posts, sane asylums, build the ghost.
Black magic, Ouija board, hologram, Henry Ford.
Atlantis, Hollywood, false flag, critter good.
Spirit science, NSA, geomancy, JFK. Great call, would attack it with facts never acted. Keeping us informed about censure or redaction. Disorder, chaos, clues that were occulted. Now catapulted, when exposed, it's a bomb that explodes and erodes the very mechanism that keeps us subjugated.
Alright people, we've long speculated about the unknown nature of our past and by extension the history of the solar system, wondering if things were ever vastly different than they are today. We have myths and ancient writings that describe radical differences and strange possibilities, but oftentimes the scientific evidence is not there to back up the stories, either yet to be discovered or has yet to leak out. But today's guest just might have one of the smoking guns we're looking for. His name is John Brandenburg, a PhD in plasma physics who is working as a consultant at Morningstar Applied Physics LLC and as a part-time instructor of astronomy, physics, and mathematics at Madison College and other learning institutions in Madison, Wisconsin. He was also part of the Clementine mission, which discovered ice at the moon's poles in 1994. He's also authored several books, including Beyond Einstein's Unified Field, Gravity and Electromagnetism Redefined, Life and Death on Mars, The New Mars Synthesis, and Death on Mars, The Discovery of a Planetary Nuclear Massacre. A very accomplished scientist who will be one of the primary presenters at the upcoming Secret Space Program Conference in Austin, and I'm lucky to spend some time with him today. John, my man, how the hell are you?
Oh, I'm just great, Greg. Just great.
Yeah, this is a real pleasure, man. We spend a lot of time speculating about the past and space and, of course, Mars. But before we really get into it, maybe you can do a little more justice to your background than my intro did so people can really get an understanding of how your resume has contributed to your discoveries about Mars' past.
Oh, sure. Well, I always wanted to be a physicist. My uncle, Will Seary, was a physicist, and he worked on the Manhattan Project during World War II. So I was very much inspired by him and by the rest of my family. So I actually went to school, got my degree, undergraduate degree in physics, and then I went to graduate school at Lawrence Livermore National Lab outside of the San Francisco Bay Area. And there I worked on controlled nuclear fusion. Well, we're trying to find a cleaner, safer form of nuclear power. And part of the time I spent working on laser fusion. Now, laser fusion is trying to miniaturize the hydrogen bomb to make it, a little, basically hydrogen bomb firecracker. And since a lot of it is based on nuclear weapons physics, I had to learn the basic physics of how nuclear weapons work. So that's kind of where my nuclear weapons background was. Yeah. And it wasn't direct, but we basically were brought up to speed on the basics. And the people who designed the neutron bomb were right down the hall, worked out right down the hall from us when we were working on our laser fusion stuff. So basically, that's what happened then is I ended up working at a place called Sandia National Labs. I went to another national labs. And there, it was also they also did a lot of work with nuclear weapons. We were actually working on directed energy weapons. So it's very much stuck in the Cold War, and the Cold War was really scary at that point. And I suddenly became aware that they'd found this, what looked like archaeology on Mars. The face on Mars and the pyramid nearby it, the work of Vince DiPietro and Molinar and Greg Molinar. And I just thought, oh, wouldn't it be wonderful if that was true? That would stop the Cold War.
Yeah.
And I really did get involved because I thought, if we find a dead civilization on Mars, the Cold War, people won't, the Russians and the Americans will both be concentrating on going to Mars together rather than fighting over, who was right, Karl Marx or Thomas Jefferson. And so I lent my talents to this investigation. It was started by Dick Hoagland. It's called the IMID investigation, the Independent Mars Investigation Team. And we basically verified everything that Vince DiPietro and Greg Molinar had done, and we pushed on beyond it. And in the process, I was standing in the library at Sandia Labs, and I was looking, I was getting ready to copy. In those days, everything had to be Xeroxed. So I was standing in line to use the Xerox machine, and a guy was standing next to me, and we were just chatting. And I mentioned that the Mars atmosphere had very unusual isotopes of xenon. And he said, what? He said. I showed him in the scientific journal that I was copying, and he stared at it for a long time, and he'd been actually, he looked like it was the end of the day. He was a very happy individual, and suddenly his smile vanished, and he handed it back to me and said, looked at me straight in the eye and said, somebody nuked him. Somehow he had looked at that data and seen weapon signature. And then he suddenly kind of clammed up, and he said, excuse me, and he left the line for the Xerox machine and walked out of the library. And I recognized that, every once in a while, if you said something inadvertently classified at Sandia Labs in an unclassified area like the library, then you basically just excused yourself and walked away. And that's what he did. And I did not understand at the time why he could interpret the data from Mars that way. But it basically took me a long, long time and a lot of research, all open literature, of course, to find out what it was that caused him to have that reaction. And finally, basically, Mars shows evidence of having an enormous amount of uranium and thorium fission. And this is these are trace isotopes in the atmosphere. You do the forensics on the Martian atmosphere, and it says, oh, some big nuclear event happened here. So at first, I thought perhaps it was a natural nuclear reactor. On Earth, we actually had natural nuclear reactors
right. In
the uranium deposits. And they ran like an ordinary nuclear reactor. They would use water to slow down the neutrons, and then they would become reactive, and then they would overheat, drive all the water out, the reaction would shut down. And this went on for millions of years down in Africa, and they found 20 spots where this happened in these big uranium deposits. So that was my first thought, and I actually almost believed it, but as I presented, I went to scientific conferences and presented this hypothesis, it was well received. And then, but as I got feedback from people, they said, oh, the xenon isn't right. And then I did some more research and I found out, no, the pattern of xenon isotopes is like a fingerprint in the Martian atmosphere is weapon signature. It means it was a fast neutron event. A normal nuclear reactor runs with slow neutrons because they're more reactive. But when you have pure uranium or plutonium, you have fast neutrons, and that's what makes the explosion. And it leaves a telltale pattern. It leaves a fingerprint, basically, of what kind of reaction occurred. And Mars atmosphere bears the results of a massive fast neutron event, which has to have been a weapon. There is no natural process that can create this. The only process known that creates this pattern is a fission-boosted hydrogen bomb.
Wow.
By the way, hydrogen bombs, they're triggered by an atomic bomb. A small atomic bomb triggers them, sort of like the blasting cap, to set off the hydrogen reaction. Hydrogen reaction sets off, releases very fast neutrons. What they do then is they put a casing of ordinary uranium, just uranium ore, around the hydrogen bomb, and the fast neutrons then split all the uranium atoms in the ordinary uranium. The neutrons are so powerful, they split ordinary uranium atoms. And uranium-238. So you get an enormous boost to the hydrogen bomb reaction and an enormous load of fallout, radioactive fallout, like radioactive iodine and strontium-90 and things that get taken up into the human body and cause cancer and death. Mm-hmm. And so, and by the way, this all used to be classified, but it's no longer classified. So you can read about it on Wikipedia. So basically, if you look at the radiation hotspots on Mars that were observed from space with gamma-ray spectrometers in both potassium and thorium, it looks like two massive hydrogen bombs, one both about the size of the Empire State Building, were dropped on Mars from space. They left no craters. The reason they left no craters is they were airbursts. Both Hiroshima and Nagasaki were airbursts, and they didn't do it for humanitarian reasons. They wanted the blast to go off in air because it creates more powerful air shock waves.
Hmm.
In other words, if you make a big crater, the energy is going into the ground. They didn't want that. They
gotcha.
Wanted to blow apart the city. And so whoever did this on Mars wanted the same thing. So we have two radioactive hotspots. We've now found that they're covered with glass called trinitite. The spectral pattern matches trinitite, which is atomic melt glass made in desert areas when they set off an atomic bomb in midair.
Mm-hmm.
And they're slightly radioactive still after millions of years. And they left no crater, meaning they went off in midair.
Right.
And if you look, then if you can read a map, you look just downwind where the shock wave and the fallout, load of fallout, would have been most intense. There is Cydonia Mensa, where the De Petra Molinar pyramid are found right next to each other. And the other explosion site, if you go downwind of that, it's a place called Galaxis Chaos, which is not as well known, but it is also called Utopia, and it's where two carved faces are found, along with the ruins of a city. So two centers of civilization on Mars are directly correlated in location to these two explosions.
Whoa.
Oh, this is, yes, and it is hard to wrap your mind around. It looks as though Mars was Earth-like in the past, had life on it, that life evolved. Finally, you had indigenous people living on Mars, they were primitive. They were like the Mayans or the ancient Egyptians, building pyramids and carving big faces like the Olmecs in Mexico. The faces on Mars resemble the Olmec faces. That's a very peculiar, thing. It's difficult to explain.
Right, the correlation.
The correlation. Here, these in the Olmecs carved these giant heads, faces wearing helmets. And that's just what you find on Mars. Some of them look almost exactly like the faces on Mars, and so it looks like it was a primitive based on an Earth reference. And I've been criticized for using everything based on an Earth reference, but it's the only reference we have.
Right.
It looks like a primitive civilization, and then it looks like somebody spacefaring came along, discovered them, and annihilated Mars with two massive nuclear weapons. It blew the whole atmosphere off of Mars and made Mars, as it is today, from being a much more Earth-like planet in the past. So that's the story,
wow.
And that is the unknown catastrophe that the NASA people referred to. They know what the catastrophe was because I've talked to them on the phone.
And let's talk about that a little bit, this unknown catastrophe, because we just got lucky, and we were talking a little bit before we started recording, that just in the past 48 hours, apparently they've come out and said that there's been the discovery of liquid water on Mars, and I guess some other things have come with it. Tell us about that a little bit.
Okay, the discovery of liquid water on Mars is the end of a long road where they knew there was water on Mars. The northern polar ice cap is a mile thick, and it's water ice. The southern cap is more dry ice, but the northern cap is where the ocean, there used to be an ocean on Mars. There's all sorts of old dried up river channels on Mars. Mars used to be an Earth-like planet with lots of water. And then something happened to Mars. I believe we know what happened now.
Right.
But there is a remnant of life on Mars, apparently. In fact, it's releasing methane into the Martian atmosphere. Mars, life on Mars is basically firing flares in order to be found. But what they found now is that parts of the Martian surface where there's exposed layers in craters. The craters blow a hole in the Martian surface and exposes the sediments.
Mm-hmm.
They're what are called water seeps. Water tables, there's a water table on Mars dating from when it used to be Earth-like. And during the summer months, the water oozes out of these layers and settles into the bottom of the crater. And they were watching these dark streaks caused by this water seeping out. And then it would happen during the summer. In the winter, it would all dry up. It would freeze, and then all the water would dry up and be lost to space. And then during the summer, it would thaw, and you'd have the seeping of water. And what is really fascinating, Mars is covered with a substance called ammonium perchlorate, which is rocket fuel.
Huh.
It's a very exotic chemical, normally only found in fireworks or rockets, military rockets, or NASA rockets. It carries a lot of oxygen in it. It's basically a chlorine atom, perchlorate. It's a sodium. It's like salt, only it's got four oxygens stuffed on it. And those oxygens want to come off and just yield regular salt, table salt. So it appears that Mars, not only does Mars have liquid water, there's something living in it, and its waste product is ammonium, is sodium perchlorate.
Wow.
It is basically excreting sodium perchlorate as a way to get rid of the plant life on Mars can't breathe in the Martian air. So what it does is it takes water and carbon dioxide and makes sugar, but instead of breathing the oxygen out, it jams the oxygen onto the salt molecule and makes it into a sodium perchlorate and then basically excretes it. so, So we have bacteria on Mars that makes rocket fuel.
Yeah. Man.
And we have other bacteria, apparently, that eats it.
Wow. Now, this is so radically different than...
Science fiction movie.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So we have a bacteria that makes rocket fuel on Mars. And it's... Oh, I'll tell you something really peculiar. It's a case of science fiction being prescient. This was in a movie. The movie The Martian is about to come out.
Right.
There was an earlier movie about an astronaut being stranded on Mars. It was a very good movie called Robinson Crusoe on Mars. And there the astronaut is saved by the fact that he can cook the rocks and make oxygen out of the rocks. And as it turns out, that's true.
Wow. I love when movies jive with real life like that.
Oh, there are a lot of aspects of that movie that turned out to be true. One of the things they found is the aurora on Mars covers the entire planet all the way down to the surface. When Mars gets an aurora, and they have that in the movie. This guy is... First night on Mars, he's freezing. He's almost freezing to death. He's sitting there trying to stay warm in his spacesuit, and he's one thing, he can't sleep, so he's watching the aurora all over Mars, and it comes right down to the surface.
Man.
But then he finds oxygen in the rocks, and that saves him. That enables him to live on Mars, and so he cooks rocks every day to get oxygen and pumps it into a tank so we can walk around with this tank and breathe out of it.
Wow.
But it turns out, so truth is stranger than fiction. We have the bacteria, which basically poop rocket fuel.
Didn't also the face on Mars, didn't that appear in a comic before it had been disclosed?
Yes, it did. Yes, it did.
Wow.
That appeared in 1958 when Sputnik had been launched.
Hmm.
There was a Kirby Comics, you can check it out on the web, Kirby Comics, Face on Mars, had a story, and the story is quite poignant. The astronauts find a big giant face on Mars, and they go investigate inside it, and they find inside the story of the death of Mars. Mars was destroyed by another alien species.
Mm. Man, so very poignant.
It is very poignant, and it turns out, once again, that science fiction was prophetic.
Mm-hmm.
I may have even read that book, that comic book, when I was young.
Wow. So let me ask you, the strangeness to the life there that we're finding, do you think that could be a mutation from this attack, or is that natural to Mars' environment?
Sodium perchlorate is a very rare chemical in nature. The only place they find it on Earth is in a desert region of Chile called the Atacama Desert. It's the driest place on Earth. It's very Martian looking. And apparently they find the perchlorate mixed with salt, sodium chloride, and nitrate. Like saltpeter. There's natural saltpeter deposits there.
Mm-hmm.
And mixed with the salt, saltpeter is regular salt, and also small amounts of this perchlorate, and they speculate that it's made by bacteria there.
Mm-hmm.
But life is very strange on Earth. every place, by the way, we find liquid water on Earth, even 8 miles underground, where it's you'd think it'd be too hot for any life to survive. There's water in that far down, and it's got bacteria in it. Something figures out how to make a living, basically at the gates of hell itself.
Yeah.
And so on Mars, it may have been a mutation, or it may have been just some natural bacteria that survived the big catastrophe, which looks like it was a massive nuclear attack. And survives on Mars to this day with this peculiar form of respiration. On Earth's deserts, I'm writing a scientific article on this, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
In Earth's deserts, the cactus, because they don't want to... The cactus leaves have pores in them, and what they do is they they absorb carbon dioxide through this leaf membranes, but they want very much not to lose any water. So they don't open their pores. They close their pores during the day, and they soak up CO2 from the air and store it. And then at night, they also store the energy of sunlight. So their photosynthetic process is much different than other plants. Instead of like a regular leaf of grass that has photosynthesis, it's wet, it's taking in oxygen, it's taking in water and CO2 and spitting out oxygen. In the cactus, it actually soaks up CO2 and sunlight during the day and then breathes out the oxygen at night.
Huh.
And the reason they do that is they don't want to lose any water because, they don't want the sweat inside of the cactus where the cells are that do all the chemical processing exposed to the dry, hot air of the day.
Right.
So at night. So on Mars, these microbes appear to have gone one better. They have to get rid of the oxygen. Oxygen is just a waste product for plants. So on Mars, they join the oxygen to a salt molecule. They jam two oxygen molecules onto each salt molecule, and then basically excrete it as a waste product.
Right.
And so everywhere they landed on Mars, they find all this perchlorate in the soil. And they couldn't, since it's a very rare chemical on Earth, they couldn't figure out what process would cause this. And so it's now, I think we know.
Mm-hmm.
So what it is it's basically rabbit pellets from a bunch of photosynthetic rabbits, and basically Mars is covered with waste product from its photosynthesis, and then of course there's bacteria on Mars that apparently eat the perchlorate, the rocket fuel,
right?
And they spit out they get rid of the oxygen into the air. They get energy from freeing the oxygen from the salt molecule.
Mm-hmm.
And so this also solves another mystery. I've been to science, and you must understand, Greg, what real scientists are like.
Okay.
A lot of scientists do not like controversy.
Right.
There were probably several people who discovered Einstein's E equals MC squared, but they thought it would be controversial, so they never published it.
So sad.
And so Einstein, who was a brash young Turk, went out and published and took all the heat for it, and some people criticized his work terribly,
Mm-hmm.
But what has happened is that there's a lot of strange things on Mars. There's methane gas bubbling out of the ground in several spots, and that's normally on Earth a product of decay. It's swamp gas.
Right.
And and that bubbles up into the atmosphere, and they can detect it from Earth telescopes. There's so much methane. So Mars life is basically firing flares to be recognized. And then, but no one will say that.
Right.
And then they also noticed that the fourth most abundant gas in the Martian atmosphere is oxygen, and it shouldn't be there. People have told me this privately over a few beers in a bar at these scientific conferences. They say, "God, the oxygen, there's way too much oxygen in the Mars atmosphere. We don't think of oxygen being a very big thing in the Martian atmosphere." No, it's the fourth most abundant gas.
Wow.
There's carbon dioxide, nitrogen, of course, both of which essential for plant life. Then there's argon, which is like inert gas like helium. It's in light bulbs.
Mm-hmm.
That's also present on Earth. The fourth most abundant, then, after that, is molecular oxygen, apparently from photosynthesis.
Wow. So, that means there was plant life there.
Oh, there's plant life on Mars, and guess what color it is, probably? It's probably red.
Nice.
So we've actually been staring at Mars life all these years and not recognizing it.
Oh.
Yeah, so they're going to find out that Mars basically crawls with life. I mean, it's primitive bacterial life. It's mm-hmm. Mars is only a mere shadow of what it used to be. Mars used to be like Earth before this horrible catastrophe happened.
That was one of my questions for you, is we're told here that if there was like nuclear destruction worldwide, that cockroaches would be something that would probably survive. Is there any chance of something that...
Cockroaches are pretty primitive, so there may be...
some kind of equivalent?
There may be multicellular life that has survived in some little niches, ecological niches. You know, there's the giant tube worms in the... at the bottom of the ocean. They're fairly complicated. They're 6 feet long. They're big. And they live off the bacteria that feast on the sulfur coming out of the volcanic vents on the bottom of the ocean. One scientist said that the ecological community lives at the bottom of the ocean around these volcanic vents.
Mm-hmm.
The sun could just suddenly go out one day and they wouldn't even notice. They would just keep right on doing what they're doing. And it's a crazy lifestyle. I mean, the giant tube worms live 6 inches from water that's hot enough to boil them. Since it's under such high pressure at the bottom of the ocean, the water doesn't boil. It can be many, many hundreds of degrees hot and yet not boil. So the tube worms live right next to these vents when in the cooler water.
And life finds a way.
Life, absolutely. And apparently life has found a way on Mars. Oh, you'll love this also. You think, why would any bacteria choose sodium perchlorate? It seems like such a... But it's easy to make. Because you've got salt on Mars. The ocean on Mars was salty. So there's a lot of salt, sodium chloride in the oceanic clay. So apparently, not only does this stuff store oxygen really well, it's easy to make with materials on Mars. Materials commonly found on Mars can be used to make this stuff, but it pulls water right out of the air.
Hmm.
Not only... is it a nice waste product? But the waste product, if your Martian algae cell or kind of lichen cell lives on a rock, it makes a bunch of sodium perchlorate to get rid of the oxygen that it's making. And then the perchlorate has the peculiar property that it actually grabs moisture right out of the air on Mars and makes it liquid around itself. So the cell actually, the more waste it excretes, the more it attracts more water.
Hmm.
I'm really excited about this idea.
Yeah.
Basically, it says that we're looking at the waste product of life on Mars, all over Mars. Once again, the evidence for life on Mars, proof of life on Mars, is actually staring us in the face all these years, and we didn't recognize it.
Yeah, man, this is so interesting. I want to get back to the bomb a little bit, or the two bombs, apparently.
Sure. Yeah.
Xenon 129, I guess, is what we're talking about. Apparently, 129 and 132 are also, they're in some type of ratio in most celestial objects, but in Mars, the 129 is way too dominant. Did we see that same kind of thing happen on Earth after we dropped the atom bomb?
That's right. We see that on Earth. The only place where you find this predominance of xenon 129 in a planetary scale is on Earth.
Hmm.
They have air samples of what the atmosphere of Earth was like before nuclear power started or nuclear weapons were invented, before 1945. So they have these air tanks. They would just go out and collect a bunch of air, compress it into a tank, like a scuba tank, and keep it.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, they'd take out some of the air and look at the xenon in it, the xenon pattern of xenon isotopes. And the xenon 129 and xenon 132 are the two most abundant, and they're twin peaks. They are almost equal.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, this is the same pattern they see in the solar wind. They've gone out and collected part of the solar wind. The xenon spectrum of xenon is the same in the solar wind as it is on Earth. They've collected moon dust that's got xenon in it. They've even collected meteorites and ground them up. And finally, they parachuted a probe into the clouds of Jupiter and measured the xenon there, and it matches Earth, this double peak, 129, 132, two equal peaks. And on Mars, the 129 in the atmosphere is 2.5 times the 132.
Hmm.
Only place you find anything like that on a planetary scale is on Earth, and that is the part of the atmosphere that has changed since 1945.
Wow.
And this is published in the open literature. So, and since then, I've been able to show, based on openly published data. By the way, the government doesn't like to talk about Xenon-129.
Why do you think that is?
The reason it doesn't, apparently, is the government... Xenon-129 is produced by fast neutrons in bombs and also in special nuclear reactors that use fast neutrons to make plutonium. So if you could basically back out how much plutonium has been made by the human race, and plutonium is a really terrible stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It makes atomic bombs. It's also incredibly toxic. And so the human race has set off a lot of atomic nuclear weapons, and that makes a lot of Xenon-129. It's also made a lot of plutonium.
Right.
Government apparently doesn't like to talk about the Xenon-129 in the atmosphere, even though they published, you know, the fact that it has changed since 1945,
mm-hmm.
simply because people could figure out how much plutonium is out there.
Right.
So it's part of what's called the atmospheric monitoring program.
Mm-hmm.
They monitor the air, like in the Pacific and Europe, to see if anyone's testing nuclear weapons secretly.
Ah.
So they don't want to talk about it.
Gotcha.
But it's fortunately, there's enough data in the open literature that you can figure it out very easily. That the Xenon-129 is due to fast neutron reactions in bombs. And so it's weapon signature. And that's why the person at Sandia Labs reacted the way he did. And by the way, I talked to some retired nuclear weapons experts, and I've shown them this, and they say, yeah, that's just what it looks like.
Wow.
So I was able to confirm that with, they unfortunately can't be quoted publicly, but
right.
So piece by piece, the scientific puzzle is put together, and it's pretty grim. When I first reached the inescapable conclusion that Mars had been targeted with nuclear weapons rather than like natural nuclear reactors or something, I found myself having nuclear war nightmares like I'd had when I was a kid, and you know, starting to get depressed.
Yeah.
So I turned around and wrote a book called Cosmic Jesus. To kind of meditate on cosmic good rather than cosmic evil.
Right.
And that's basically one of the problems for the government is a lot of people in this country are very religious.
Yeah.
And fundamentalist Christians just have an allergy to discussions of extraterrestrial life. They don't think it's in the Bible. But I showed that in the book Cosmic Jesus that extraterrestrial life and intelligence is very much implied by the Bible.
Yeah, it definitely is.
When you read it in the Greek, in fact, it's obvious that God is talking about life and intelligence on other planets. When you read the New Testament in the Greek, rather than people think that the Bible, fundamentalists believe that the Bible was dictated by in Shakespearean English, but you know, to King James. Mm-hmm. No.
Right. They filtered that out when they translated it.
And the word for world in the New Testament is the word cosmos.
Interesting.
That is what is translated as the word world in English, King James English. So when Jesus says, go out into all the world, preach the gospel to every creature, he's really saying, go out into all the cosmos. All of the, and it means exactly now what it meant then, the whole universe. Mm. Go out into the entire universe and preach the gospel to every creature. And when it says, when, you know, for God so loved the world, he gave his only begotten son, the word is, again, cosmos. So this kind of fortified me, and I'm just an Episcopalian. I'm not a fundamentalist, but I still am still a person of faith, right. And I'm an Episcopalian. So this was very comforting to me. And once I had written that book, I felt like I could write a book about what happened on Mars. Mm-hmm. And so I have done so. It's called Death on Mars. Discovery of a planetary mass, nuclear planetary massacre. So that's how I dealt with the, you know, the really...
The darkness of it.
The darkness of it. I'm sorry. We're talking about, you know, people back in the 60s, it was fashionable to say that the human race was an aberration on nature and that we were the most evil creatures on Earth. For a while they said, why can't we be nice like the chimpanzees? They didn't understand the chimpanzees had an enormous, very high murder rate.
Right.
And so I said people used to think the human race was the most evil species in the universe. I said, but that was just conceit on our part.
That's funny.
No, whoever did this to Mars is way ahead of the human race.
And when do we think this happened?
It looks as though, and here's the reason, the radioactive scars on Mars, where the debris patterns come from and the nuclear glass and everything, those are only in the very long half-life isotopes. The short half-life isotopes, like iron and silicon, which only are radioactive for a few million years, they don't show this pattern. So that means, but potassium stays radioactive for a billion years. If you shoot off an atomic bomb, the potassium in the soil will stay radioactive for a billion years. Mm. So based on that and some other evidence, it looks as though this happened about somewhere between a half and a quarter billion years ago. In other words, it's incredibly ancient in human terms.
Wow.
By the way, the reason 1/4 billion years may be significant is that you mentioned earlier cockroaches being radiation resistant.
Mm-hmm.
The cockroaches were one of the groups that survived the Great Permian extinction, which was the most severe mass extinction in Earth history,
mm-hmm.
far more severe than the one that wiped out the dinosaurs. The one that wiped out the dinosaurs, we understand now, was because of an asteroid. The Permian extinction got a completely unknown cause, and it was so bad the ocean died. All the insects except cockroaches died. And in fact, I urged in the book Death on Mars that anyone investigating the Great Permian extinction, if they saw any isotopic anomalies that might be connected with a nuclear weapon, they had to report that. You know, please report that.
Right.
So it's possible that whoever nuked Mars decided to nuke Earth too, just to be sure.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you, because you said that these two areas of Mars are covered in trinitite, and we have areas on the planet that are covered in that too, right? In India, I believe?
That's the Libyan desert. There's a substance called Libyan glass. It looks just like trinitite, but it's from a far bigger event. and nobody knows what caused it. They think it's a meteor. All they'll say is, the origins of this are very controversial.
Right.
And for a lot of scientists who are basically a mild-mannered group in general, they don't want to get involved in anything controversial.
Right.
They're trying to get tenure at their universities. And the way you get tenure is you don't do controversial things.
Right.
And so you basically spend your career carefully avoiding conflict, and if you can. And so it's a, there's a big mystery on Earth that may be connected to this, but that's pretty scary.
Right.
So a lot of people don't like to talk about that part, but I think we're going to have to. The big message of the book Death on Mars is that now that we have found what appears to this, we have to go to Mars.
Right.
And by the way, the discovery of liquid water on Mars not only means that there's almost certainly life on Mars right now, but it also means that supporting human life on Mars is now two or three times easier.
Mm-hmm.
We don't have to bring all our water with us. Water's heavy. We can land on Mars, and there's plenty of water there for us.
Yeah.
All we have to do is get the bacterial waste products out of it.
Right.
The rocket, strain out the rocket fuel. We can even use it for rockets. Yeah, Mars grows rocket fuel.
So another question for you. You mentioned that the civilizations on Mars seem like they were primitive or Bronze Age at a time.
Right.
How do we know that this was an outsider bombing them and not some ancient war on the planet in a more civilized time?
You know, that's a very good question. And one of my colleagues has said to me that, John, your insistence that this is a primitive civilization blown up by somebody else rather than blowing themselves up, you know, your insistence that this is a primitive civilization sounds like famous last words. You know, that, and I will freely admit, I don't know what level of civilization they had. My interpretation that it was primitive is based on an Earth reference, that people who carved this kind of big, built these big monuments, carved these big faces, on Earth, they were primitive, Bronze Age kind of people. But we're applying rules that apply on Earth to another planet, so it could easily be that they had an advanced civilization and that we simply are misinterpreting it.
Yeah, I mean, or it could be just a rogue ship out there that had some high technology that wanted to test it out. It said, screw it, let's hit these two planets. Well, man, that pretty much does it for us. Fascinating ideas, compelling evidence.
Discovery of liquid water on Mars means we can be 99% sure that we're going to find life on Mars within the next 5 years.
And that's a beautiful thing.
It is, and it's a great advance for humanity. This is a good day.
It is a good day. Would you like to remind the people about your book, website, or other ways they can keep up with what you're doing?
Yes, the proposal I have, or the hypothesis that Mars was nuked, can be found on lifeonmars.pub. All the latest data is presented there. It's also in the book Death on Mars, which is available from Amazon.com.
Awesome. Well, thanks so much for being here, man. Have a great time at the conference and take care of yourself.
Okay, Greg. Take care.
See you later. Hold me closer, tiny dancer. There it is, guys. John Brandenburg dropping knowledge that it seems pretty safe to say Mars was nuked. The proof is in the pudding, the case is in the clouds, and I find it pretty interesting info. I also find myself feeling like I have a rabid audience that really tears up anyone who thinks of space and science in any sort of conventional way, but yet, by conventional standards, John's way out of the box, way out in the fringe. So he's in a certain no man's land here. But I did this to myself with guests like Eric DeBay and Crow to some extent, and I thoroughly enjoy the work of both, even though Eric added Crow to his list of shills because God forbid someone not be completely convinced the Earth is flat. But I love hearing from these guests. The weirder, the better, you know? And it's probably time we checked in with Crow again soon, by the way. But not everyone is going to ramp up the strangeness to a 10. And just because we all agree NASA is deceptive, there's a lot of wiggle room between total honesty and creating an artificial infinite cosmos for us here in an Earth egg. I don't know, it's hard to gauge. But I think John is a good, smart guy who's worked really hard to be a player in some of these fields, and he's extracted an important piece of information that probably wasn't going to be brought into the light without a guy like John. It's great stuff, and it's a basis for some of those more radical stories and mythologies. Always the God of War. I mean, how the hell does that happen? It seems too coincidental. Yet how can anyone know what happened a quarter of a billion years ago? Maybe it is just coincidence. I think a lot of us have this tendency to want to weave a complete narrative from first manipulation to present day with only one target, and I think that's a bit simplistic. By the same token, I think a lot of us want to believe that at least someone somewhere knows everything about history, even if it is the pesky puppet masters, or if it's locked in the basement of the Vatican somewhere. There's just a comfort in the feeling that the knowledge isn't totally lost, that there just aren't huge, unknowable blank spots in history, but I'm not so sure. The mythology around Mars matching up to this possible piece of evidence is no doubt compelling, but I don't know if we can ever fully fill in the unknown cracks of history. And that makes me more unsettled than anything, really. But there it is. For anyone who's listening to the free shows, just sitting on the fence waiting to be pushed over into the plus side, you really have missed a lot in the past 5 shows or so. But also in today's show, we talked about the details of what's known about the Galaxis Chaos site on Mars. They sometimes call it the Utopia site. We talk about the silver lining to bringing this new information into our worldview, the idea that it's a Darwinian intelligence test for humanity, John's thoughts on the asteroid belt and the moon landing and NASA's trustworthiness, unified field theory and the missing light radiation component, and the science that makes UFOs work. It's a good time. I hope you'll consider supporting the show. I know everyone under the sun asks for donations or a subscription, and it's really annoying, but I like to think that I do it less than most others, and only at the end of the show, after you've heard everything. But the fact remains, it's a necessity to talk about. I see the tens of thousands of people that listen to the free show every week, and the fraction that participate in hearing the full show, and plus, it's hard not to take it personally. But talking about it for 5 minutes instead of 2 minutes probably isn't going to be the thing that gets it done. And I try to make it less about doing me a favor or begging you for money, and instead just trying to make a kick-ass extended show so that we have a simple, easy exchange. So treat yourself. Because with the same amount of money you give a waiter, I'm going to bring you a lot more than a sandwich. I'm going to give you 5 extra hours of speculation and education that I think, with some guests, could be considered pretty priceless. And then other times we're talking about space spider parasites and jump rooms to Mars. It's a spectrum, people. But you know, for all the strangeness that we get into, I've never really found one of these I've been to Mars guys to be all that compelling. Maybe that's sacrilegious considering to what extent we've gone here, but I could totally believe that we've reverse engineered craft or made some secret deals or even just advanced our technology enough in the Black Ops projects to get to Mars. But these I've been to Mars guys always have to throw out something else that I just can't stomach, like Andy Basagio and his comments that he was in a secret space program that took him to Mars and Obama was there, and then he was a time traveler that went back to the crucifixion of Christ and then forward in time to a timeline where he saw himself as president. And then there's other guys that say they know we have a Mars base, they've been there, and they were also transported into a fetus suddenly when they were 17, and now they have memories in the womb. I guess just Mars bases is never enough, is it? But here, this is real evidence. Sure, you and I can't verify that there's xenon 129 in Mars' atmosphere, but if there is, and John seems pretty sure of that, it clarifies at least a few questions about the history of the solar system. There was life and atomic weaponry on Mars. That's huge. It's evidence you can take to your skeptical dad or whoever you might be reluctant to share these shows with usually. So maybe that's a good thing there. Also, guys, I got a big thanks from Matthew Cross, who we talked to on the Golden Ratio episode. He says he's mailed out a ton of free books, and everybody's been really great who's reached out. And I do think I have a more dialed-in, engaged audience than most, and that's a beautiful thing, and it's worth thanking you guys for. It's an important piece of the puzzle because I just had someone reach out to me for representation, and I was pretty shocked and flattered, I guess, But I am never going to go down that road. I am never going to get the publicist and the marketers and the producers, because I don't want the drama and I don't want the show to change. So many shows I've loved have gotten big and changed and lost the magic. And so when I think of what a publicist does, they go out there and they sell me as a big deal, puff up the show to get bigger guests and to get me on other shows. Well, I don't need to be puffed up or the success of the show to be embellished. I'm not a fan of that shallow marketing world, and I hope the strength of the show will stand on its own. And for the most part, it does. But it was listeners reaching out to Chris Jericho that made that happen. And it was listeners reaching out to some of these bigger guests that have gotten THC on their radar. In fact, just again this week, a potential guest who had written me off is now going to make an appearance because some listeners reached out to them and said there is no better place to be than THC. So you guys really are the publicists. You guys have been the marketing team and the promoters, and it happens organically because if you like the show and you want better shows to listen to, these things help. And reaching out to guests after they've been on lets them know that they didn't waste their time, and a really good response ensures they'll come back. And thanks for doing all that. It's key. I feel like I really can tell when it happens because a few days after the show, a guest will email me and be like, man, I really had a good time. If you ever want to do it again, don't hesitate. And to me, that's a clear indication that you guys have reached out to them and they've seen some measurable effects from being on THC. Because everybody's in it for the promotion. Not everybody, but you know, it is a part of this whole thing, like it or not. So anyway, I'm still waiting to hear back from the Money Bomb winner for September. I'm trying to give them $290. They just don't want to take it. And again, anyone who's going to the Secret Space Program conference in Austin this month, you can see Jim Mars and John Brandenburg speaking there, and you can get a discount on your tickets with the coupon code SSPTHC2015. It rhymes, it flows, it's easy to remember, or you can just click on the banner at thehiresidechats.com. Another quick side note, I do have a lot of people writing me and commenting, man, I really love that music you used on this episode or that episode, that final song, who made it, where can I get it? And honestly, the answer is always the same from this point out. I altered the lyrics, I hired an artist to create the track, I now have a few that I trust that I use regularly, and all the music is freely available to the Plus members. There is a spot on the menu bar that says THC Music. You click on that, all the songs come up in an easy to download MP3 format. So just another reason to join Plus. If there weren't enough already, I know, shut the hell up about it. I'm sorry. You're all great. And when I think about the fact that we have enough listeners now to fill Madison Square Garden many times over, I get a little nervous. I do. But I gotta call it in. I gotta get out of here. Your move, ancient atom bomb droppers of the infinite cosmos. Your freaking move.